This is your host, Mark Anderson, American Free Press editor. During the American Free Press Hour, we may be contending with some minor technical difficulties. A bandmate of mine back in the rock band days used to call them technical difficulties. I think he had too much to drink. God rest his soul if he even survived. At any rate, we had a good show last night with Linda Green of Fluoride Free Austin. Lots of good calls. It's very reassuring to see that Dr. Paul Connett, a Cambridge and American-educated scientist, and Dr. Neil Carman, who called in, and others, many activists in San Diego and in Austin and around the country where fluoridation is a big issue, where they see it as at least bad science, possibly even chemical warfare against the people by their own leaders at some level. You know, I was busy one day, busy watching TV. I actually wasn't all that busy in general. I was flipping through the channels busily, and I found one day a episode of The Twilight Zone. Any other Twilight Zone fans out there, you can call and tell me your favorite episode. I love The Twilight Zone. I remember seeing it when I was a little kid, and as I sat there, 5, 6 years old, whatever it was, I remember feeling just freaked out by the whole thing, but I was very intrigued. And I was reminded that one recent day, flipping through the channels, of seeing an episode. I recall seeing it when I was young, and I was seeing it again this year, and that was called Black Leather Jackets. Who remembers that one? Well, Black Leather Jackets was about a inside society of aliens from another planet, but they looked just like Earthlings, of course. They're just actors. And they didn't change their appearance and give them three heads or anything like that. And these black leather jackets, that was their insignia. They wore those jackets, and they had a certain kind of symbol that they carried around, sort of like the Trilateral Commission has the symbol of theirs and so on. And they had sort of a Masonic relationship, these black leather jackets, but they were actually aliens posing as humans. And the way they wanted to take over the earth and subdue and wipe out the population was by poisoning the water. Isn't that instructive in its own way? Very interesting indeed. And eerie, but isn't it even more eerie, ladies and gentlemen, that we deal with potential and apparent chemical warfare, inadvertent, intended, whatever the case might be, from our own people? We don't have the excuse of saying, well, these are outside attacking aliens that are invading our planet and they want to poison our water or our air or mess with our food. Oh, no. We have GMO foods and weird things called chemtrails that are still a bit of a mystery overall, although there's some credible information finally beginning to come out about those. And then we have the poisoning of the water for profit via fluoridation. It's just a tremendous irony that this comes from our own kind, our own people. Sometimes I'm very taken aback by that. At any rate, I'll be back with more news and views from me, myself, and I right after these messages, and we'll go from there. Thanks.
The American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter.
Are you new to freeze-dried foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space.
Independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer and you are mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning, and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with Lay's Med Incorporated's patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, visit www.laysmedinc.com on the web. That's www.laysemedinc.com.
Call now, 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528.
The Berkey Light's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkey Light, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkey Light is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkey Light, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200. 605-9200.
I'm your host, Mark Anderson, American Free Press editor, as noted. And thanks for listening to my opening commentary there on the sheer irony of what we're dealing with in terms of fluoridation, where we're dealing with chemical warfare of a sort from our own kind rather than beings from beyond, as is seen in that one Twilight Zone episode I referred to. A very interesting metaphor and analogy indeed. And in just a couple of minutes, there was a slight glitch on my end, but we're going to bring on a fine writer, William Norman Grigg, whom I've known for several years, brilliant researcher, great author, and a blogger right now, and we'll talk about his articles, his main interests, and what's going on with him. But we had a caller come in here. We'll go right to the caller because he's from England. His name is Patrick, and what would you like to say, Patrick?
Yes, good evening. Lovely to go on your show again. I was on about a week or two ago, and I thought you were talking about the climate sort of thing, the geoengineering aerosol sort of thing. But yes, the Twilight Zone. I've actually only just recently watched one. Actually, I actually watched a clip of one today, and I remember. I'm in my 40s, and you know, I remember when these all came out late 50s to early 60s or mid 60s. I mean, I wasn't really born then. So they're all in black and white, and they're all curious. Now, the one that I watched recently is called The Obsolete Man. And you can find it on YouTube. It's broken down into three bits, and you can see a summary bit. Now, I don't know if you have you seen that one already, The Obsolete Man?
Being a Twilight Zone fan, not an aficionado. I don't know him like the, you know, someone would know their Michael Jackson records or something. But I do happen to remember that one somewhat. And but go right on. What happens in that?
What it portrays is the possibility, and of course I don't believe it will happen because the Lord's coming back. It portrays a future typical totalitarian New World Order type of situation, a bit like that. When it was actually made, it was 1961, because we were at the Cuban Missile Crisis. The communist regime was at its height, and it was perceived to be very oppressive, and the power of the state, and you were born to serve the state, and you were born like a serf. And a man called Mr. Romney Wordsworth was on trial for the crime of being obsolete, at which he had to be eliminated if found guilty. And he was in his courtroom. Yeah, and his profession was a librarian. And of course, since there are no books, the Chancellor says, we have no services for a librarian. He's found guilty of being obsolete. And there's a great show of words, and, you know, and the Chancellor's ranting and raving on behalf of the state for his microphone, for his tannoy system, and saying, you know, it's like a minister would say his duty is to preach the gospel, but as the state has proven there is no God, and so an argument breaks out between him, the defendant, there is a God, you know, you cannot do away with God with an edict, and it goes on like that, some great sort of exchange of words. You know, and poetry, yes. The Bible, and it's a great showdown in this giant court, but he's still convicted of being obsolete, so he's due to be eliminated. He can choose the method by which he must be eliminated. He chooses for a bomb to go off in his room, or an explosion, and he requests the Chancellor to come and visit him at the last hour, and he comes up, and he manages to get the Chancellor locked into the room, so he can't escape. So eventually the Chancellor pleads with him to let him go, and he admits, in the name of God, let me go. So he admits that there is a God, and he is let out, and of course the bomb goes out. In the end, the Chancellor, the tables are turned, the Chancellor himself, who condemned the guy, is found to be obsolete for being a coward by the other court. Who, do you remember that?
Oh my goodness. You know, that just floods back seeing that one. And yeah, Rod Serling, for all his quirks and oddities, was quite a visionary. And you know, it's almost like playing Emerson, Lake, and Palmer to a 1902 class. It's just kind of way beyond them, you know. And but very interesting. I appreciate you sharing that, Patrick. I think a lot of us might have our favorite episode. The Black Leather Jackets is one of mine, and The Obsolete Man, one of yours. I like that one a lot, too. But I'm going to bring a guest on now, but I really appreciate that. I'm going to, the first thing I'm going to do is watch that on YouTube.
Yeah.
Right. Literally. Okay.
Okay, well, good night then.
Yeah, good night. Thanks for calling, Patrick.
See you. Bye.
Yeah, best of luck to you. Okay, at sort of an odd time compared to usual, we're going to bring our guest on tonight, William Norman Gregg. You out there, Will?
I am. How are you doing this evening, Mark?
Pretty well. It's been a while since I've spoken with you. You were on this my fledgling broadcast a couple years ago. I'm not going to say that it's, covering Moscow and Peking and Vienna with the truth in blanket fashion. Doing the best I can. Maybe aliens are listening, like Carl Sagan used to say. You know, there's some sort of waves going out.
Reading notes.
Yes. We can only hope. But, yes, now, just for listeners, some no doubt are familiar with you, but you do Pro Libertate. Am I getting that right?
That's correct, yeah.
Now, give the blog or web location real quick.
freedominourtime.blogspot.com.
freedominourtime.blogspot.com.
Freedominourtime is one run-on word, freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Or you can Google Pro Libertate, ProLibertate, and that would probably be one of the first returns you'd get.
Yes, now I've read your stuff, of course, formerly in the New American, and also a lot on Pro Libertate, freedominourtime.blogspot.com. And you do a lot, of course not exclusively, but you do a lot on analyzing the behavior of law enforcement and the philosophy and the policies behind it. And it's incredible what's happened to the police mindset. Of course, we've had the day that changed everything, as it's known, and now we're getting into the 10th year since that. But even before 9/11/01, 10 years ago, these things were afoot. And what do you make of all this? It's to where I don't even want to have a contact with a police officer anymore, and it's not that I don't trust them in as much as I just have an instinct that they're just not hiring the kind of people they used to hire, that there's something drastically wrong, and the likelihood of meeting an honest cop is almost like seeing a unicorn. I mean, what's going on here?
Mark, your instincts are sound, and I think your perception of a change in the culture of law enforcement is also very reliable. And one of the things that has happened over the last decade is an accentuation of a trend that really started in the late 60s or early 1970s, in which it was assumed that the police were quite literally involved in a war on the streets of America's cities. And that was a paradigm shift that I think you can lay at the feet of the Great Society and those elements of the Great Society that continued under the Nixon administration. In the Nixon administration particularly, martial language started to be employed with respect to the contrived cultural conflict over narcotics consumption. This was not a huge problem. It never has been a huge problem. It's been one that's marginal, peripheral to American society. If you take a look at the rates of usage and addiction of mind-altering substances, they've been more or less constant over the last century or so. Back in the days of our pious forebears in the late 19th, early 20th century, practically everything that is now considered an illicit mind-altering substance was perfectly legal and readily accessible. You had cocaine being advertised in family magazines as a topical analgesic or as a, excuse me, as a palliative for toothaches or for sore throats or things of that sort. It was, of course, put into syrup that was used to make soft drinks. That's where Coca-Cola comes from. You take a look at the origins of marijuana. It was something that, once again, was sort of at the borders of society. It was something that was being consumed by jazz musicians and by Mexican immigrant workers and so forth, but you didn't have a huge and growing problem of addiction to these substances. And the one effort that was made to use the power of the state to cure the public of its naughtiness in terms of consuming a mind-altering substance was alcohol prohibition, and we know how that turned out. That, of course, was a famous success in social engineering. It engendered organized crime, and it led to the militarization of the police, and this was done by way of a constitutional amendment that was repealed within about a decade and a half. What's happened over the last 30 or 40 years is that primarily as a result, I think, of this effort to enforce prohibition of narcotics consumption, the war against the polluting of America's bloodstream, the nationalization of our gustatory channel, if you will, and our bloodstream, is that you have a situation where there has been a commingling of military and law enforcement and a change in the way that people in law enforcement see their role. They're no longer part of the general citizenry that has a specific vocation of doing what citizens should and can do at all times, which is to protect life, liberty, and property against violent assault. That's the definition that Robert Peel gave of police when he created the first government police agencies in Great Britain back in the early 19th century. They're like everybody else, it's just they do this for a living. Now, we're to look at the police as more or less a caste apart from the rest of society, which is why there's this distinction, and I think it's an insidious one, between law enforcement officers and civilians, when peace officers, as they were once called, were supposed to be part of the civilian population. And as a result, largely, of the so-called war on drugs, you've got the Pentagon treating and equipping law enforcement like a domestic army of occupation, and no good thing will come of it.
Hold that thought, Will. We got some quick messages. We'll be right back with William Norman Gregg. Stay tuned.
Introducing IXL Anti-Friction Metal Conditioner. IXL works at the molecular level to reduce friction by penetrating into and bonding onto the microscopic openings of the walls of ferrous base metals. The surfaces become smoother and denser, and this reduces the heat, friction, metal expansion, and wear caused by moving metal surfaces. The benefits are reduced maintenance activities and cost, increased fuel efficiency, and prolonged equipment life. It will not clog filters, pipes, injectors, or supply lines, does not build up or accumulate upon itself as do many other additives. IXL does not contain moly, PTFE, or graphites. Also offers the tremendous benefits of being non-toxic. It's used for a friction reducer and performance enhancer in gas or diesel engines, transmissions, automatic or standard gearboxes, turbos, electric motors, outdrives, lathe, and cutting applications. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, then to our online store, or call us at 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719.
Hey, Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Huh. For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Have you heard? Proactiv is new and better than ever. Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway, and you'll also receive free shipping.
Do you have troubled skin, acne? Well, we have great news. With new Proactiv, your acne can heal and you can prevent new breakouts from happening. Be one of the first to try it by giving us a call at 1-800-635-1053. Because we're going to let a million people try new Proactiv risk-free. Get two free gifts and also receive free shipping when you call right now.
You heard it. Be one of the first to try new and better than ever Proactiv, and you'll receive a 60-day risk-free trial of the new Proactiv, two free extras, and free shipping when you call 1-800-635-1053. This is our best radio offer ever. Get your risk-free 60-day trial of new Proactiv plus free shipping. That's right, free shipping. This offer won't last long. Call 1-800-635-1053. That's
1-800-635-1053. Returning to the air on this fine evening, January 27, 2011. I'm your host, Mark Anderson, American Free Press editor. First cheap plug of the night through this station, and through this station only, is the great deal, 18 weeks for $17.76 of AFP. That's over 4 months of arguably the leading national news weekly. $17.76 for 18 weeks. Check it out. Call 888-699-NEWS. You can do that for new or renewal subscriptions. 888-699-NEWS, or go to AmericanFreePress.net. We've got a number of hot stories, both recent and upcoming, including one you're going to want to see on the battle to defluoridate Austin, Texas, San Diego, California, and the overall general battle against that insidious chemical in our public water that's been there far too long. So a very important issue that was covered last night on the show. Getting back to William Norman Grigg, our guest tonight. Well, as you were saying, police have went through this metamorphosis, and I'll note that we're in a short segment, then we come to the bottom of the hour, then we go to the ads, and then we get into a longer segment. So with that in mind, go ahead and continue.
I think that one of the best illustrations of what's happening here is the proliferation of SWAT and tactical teams into towns and villages that are not large enough to support even a fully equipped and standardly appointed police agency. I'm living in a small town on the western border of Idaho, hard against the Snake River. We're part of the Malheur Valley, which goes roughly from Boise deep into Malheur County, Oregon. Malheur County is huge and thinly populated. You're dealing with a town here, Payette, Idaho, where I live, about 7,000 people. Ontario, Oregon, which is across the Snake River, is about 11 to 12,000, and you've got a multi-state, multi-jurisdictional SWAT team being created here. It's not because they're having an organized crime problem of any significance. They don't have a gang problem of any particular magnitude, because there's federal funding available to create these multi-jurisdictional narcotics task forces in order to go after people who have often trivial amounts of marijuana or crystal meth or other substances that the government, in its ineffable wisdom, has decided we shouldn't have access to unless they give us permission. Meth the meth situation is particularly obnoxious because that's the result of drug intervention and manipulation of the market by virtue of the drug warrior cult, basically, over the last 20 or 30 years. Crystal meth really didn't exist until about 20 or 30 years ago, and methamphetamine is, of course, a byproduct of amphetamine, which was distributed and has been, and I think continues to be distributed, by the federal government to military personnel. I know that in Afghanistan, some of the military has been using a derivative of amphetamine. You once again go back and take a look at advertisements from the 1950s that were touting amphetamine as a stimulant for fighter pilots during the Korean War. So this is an illustration, once again, of the idea that whatever the government ordains is right and just and moral, and that which is done without government permission, otherwise the government would okay, that becomes a crime. The DARE education that you get, the DARE indoctrination you get in government schools really hammers that message home. They're taught about the evils of using drugs in DARE class, and then some of them are taken to a dispensary and given Ritalin, which is a scheduled narcotic, but because the government gives us its imprimatur, this is supposedly all right. But this is driving the militarization of law enforcement in large measure because it's such a target-rich environment. You cannot eradicate drug use. They've created a perfect situation here. Some people refer to this as the self-licking ice cream cone. It's a problem that creates its own demand. It's a solution that creates its own problem, and you end up with this closed feedback loop. They've created a situation where they cannot help but have a lot of business, and because of civil asset forfeiture, which is a doctrine that permits the police to seize and prosecute in civil court, not in criminal court, property and money that is suspected of having a nexus to drug trafficking, you have a situation now where police agencies are full-time revenue farmers, and often you have a SWAT team or a tactical team which is used purely and simply as a revenue center. They execute these drug warrants, often no-knock warrant raids, at obscenely early hours in the morning or late at night, in Soviet fashion, the proverbial midnight knock on the door or 6 a.m. knock on the door. And, of course, many of us have seen YouTube videos or other files depicting how you have these bucket-headed, armored people busting into homes and terrorizing everybody inside on the basis of a no-knock warrant, often at the wrong address, but even when they have the right address, they're being sent on trivial missions that have no particular danger in terms of the people on the delivering end of the raid, and tremendous danger of people on the receiving end. But these are snapshots of a country that is literally confronting a military occupation, and that's a mindset that bleeds over from the tactical and SWAT units into the mindset of the common line officers.
Now, is this true or not?
I'm sorry?
Let me ask you a question. At first we heard, and we only got about a minute here, at first we heard that too many first responders were being whisked away and sent into Iraq and Afghanistan. The government was nationalizing our state National Guard, sending them away. Oop, there goes Johnny off to war. Mm-hmm. And we thought, isn't that terrible? We have a shortage of first responders, and maybe that's not totally good. But then they come back with a kill the terrorist mindset.
Exactly.
Hold on to that. Oh, well, we got more messages. It's always a kind of a side swipe here. But we'll be back with more with William Norman Greg and take a few calls if you'd like. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Do you need help getting your child to behave? I'm behavioral therapist James Lehman, and I'm willing to give away thousands of my best-selling total transformation programs for free. All you do is tell us how the program works for you and your family. Did it turn around your child's behavior? Did the screaming and arguing stop in your home? Is he doing better in school? The total transformation has helped hundreds of thousands of families. I want to see what it can do for you, and I'm willing to let you have it for free. Just order my program, use it with your child, then send me your feedback. I'll refund the purchase price of the program. You keep the Total Transformation Program forever, for free. You don't have to struggle with your child's bad behavior one more day, because now you can try my Total Transformation, and the program will be free.
Limited number of free programs available. Call now. 1-800-583-1093. 1-800-583-1093.
That's 1-800-583-1093.
Don't answer it!
If fear strikes your heart when the phone rings, knowing it may be another bill collector, it's time for you to call Zero Debt in 90 Days. 800-477-9256. Settlements, bankruptcy, and attorneys are not the answer and may end up costing you up to 10 times more than necessary. Listen, if you're already in debt, does it make sense to get buried in another payment plan? Zero Debt in 90 Days gets you out of debt in 90 days guaranteed without a payment plan and without attorneys or going to court. Get the fastest relief from debt on the planet when you call 800-477-9256. If you have debt with the IRS, credit cards, student loans, or a foreclosure, we can help at Zero Debt in 90 Days, and we are the only organization to provide written guarantees on the results. Go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. That's ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Or call now for free information, 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256.
Attention RBN listeners, the Freeze-Dry Guy, providing the finest in long-term storage food since 1970. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. In actual scientific tests, these foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. These foods are delicious tasting, hearty, light to carry, and easy to prepare under the most adverse conditions. Unfortunately, many people building a family food storage program, as well as many companies providing emergency feeding programs, simply do not give you enough protein, especially animal protein. No other food satisfies like animal protein during stressful times. If you're a meat eater, you will definitely want our freeze-dried meats and entrees, but we do offer vegetarian items as well. Visit freezedryguide.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. Freeze Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Internet, and any way we can get people to listen, that's the way we're doing it here. And we're talking with William Norman Gregg, former New American writer, now does Pro Libertate, his well-read blog. He does a lot of investigations into the police state, the why, the where, the who, the how, and he's covered a number of other issues. We were just talking about the militarization of our police and how it's evolved over the years due to the war on drugs, due to lots of booty from the Department of Homeland Security since 9/11, and other federal money flowing before that. The militaristic mindset is set in. They got money to create things where they don't even need to create them. Will, out west where you're talking about, in that western part of Idaho, is there even much population, let alone crime?
No. As a matter of fact, you probably have taken in aggregate the part of Payette County, Idaho, where I live, and now your county thing in total, you probably have fewer people who live in that region of the Rocky Mountain West than you have in Boise, Idaho, which is the only city of any significance in this part of Idaho. As a matter of fact, it's the only city in Idaho. Idaho is a very rural state. It's very thinly populated, and as I mentioned before, Malheur County, which abuts the part of Idaho where I live, is very, very large. It goes all the way down to the border of Nevada, and it's very thinly populated. Beautiful, of course. If you love fishing, trout fishing in particular, pheasant hunting, it's a beautiful place to live. I grew up in this part of the western United States. I was on the other side of the Snake River in the People's Republic of Oregon until I was 16. Then we fled by balloon to Idaho in the late period of part of the Carter presidency. We simply had to get out. We're so being regulated and taxed to death.
So right. you're a refusenik. You're a, yes. You were searching for sanctuary.
Exactly. You know, we fled, as many other people fled from Oregon into Idaho, and that's continuing right now, of course. But we make cross-border raids frequently because although everything that lives, breathes, or produces is taxed into penury in Oregon, they don't have a sales tax on groceries. And so we'll make a cross-border raid, and we'll brave the seatbelt laws and the other nanny state enactments that characterize Oregon in order to do our shopping and then come back.
Let me comment how big of them it is, how passionate and big of them it is not to tax the groceries.
Exactly. But But they're trying to get around that, of course. But italicize the point you're making there, Mark. No, there's not sufficient population here even to have a tax base sufficient to support SWAT teams of this sort. And that's because the federal money is coming in by way of this war on drugs. This is just last week, to give you an illustration of how staggeringly perverse this whole mechanism is, there was a meeting of a task force that was put together primarily by people here in Payette County, but also Canyon County, which is the county next door. People came over from Ada County, which is Boise, the capital. They came over to talk about the idea of putting together a support team to have Idaho declared a high impact drug trafficking state. That's their objective.
Saying it makes it so, yes.
I'm sorry?
They say it, therefore that makes it so.
Exactly. That is the first on their list of objectives, is to have the state declared a high-impact drug trafficking state so they can join a multi-state methamphetamine strike force that would bring in more federal money to outfit more paramilitary police. And this is how the engine is self-perpetuating. You have the federal money come in, they identify a problem, and the problem, of course, is exacerbated by government policy. And then it supports itself not only through federal money, but also through confiscations and forfeitures. The deputy of the year here in Payette County, who was recognized just a couple of weeks ago, is the guy who was most energetic in forfeiting property associated with drug trafficking or drug possession. It's got to be that obvious and that brutal and that blatant.
Let me ask you this. Besides the tempting idea to draw them a graphic for their business of a self-licking ice cream cone, which would be a really cute little piece of art, if I may say.
Yeah, like an Escher print.
What would these people do, and I wonder about the U.S. military, if I may have a little poetic license, what would they do against a real enemy, the Russian army, or an actual uniformed, trained, sharp military foe, instead of bombing and killing villagers with drones in Pakistan and other defenseless, hapless people? What would these police officers do in the face of some real competition, a real force, as opposed to a couple guys with joints in their pockets or a small lab, because their only alternative to working, if they can't find a job, is join the military or have a methamphetamine lab? Well, some of them have to choose the lab, and I'm not condoning it, but
no.
They seem to go for awfully easy prey.
They have. You can extrapolate from the performance that is readily accessible anytime you go to YouTube or any of the file sharing sites, where you see these horrible spectacles of perfectly harmless people being thrown to the ground and brutalized, often with the portable electroshock torture device, commonly called a taser, or otherwise being beaten into submission. The people generally receiving that treatment are isolated, unarmed, and harmless. Typically, you're dealing, of course, with people who are very much outsized and outnumbered by the police. And every time this happens, we're always told that they posed a threat to officer safety because they were not immediately and fully cooperative. If you display so much as a tremor of hesitation, let alone anything that could be reasonably or unreasonably construed as defiance, then you pose an immediate threat to officer safety. Just recently in Utah, there was a tardily disclosed video of a traffic stop in which you had a woman, 56 or 58-year-old woman, surrounded by police officers. One of them was tasering her through an open window of her car. The other was repeatedly hitting her in the face. And this was justified because she supposedly posed a threat to these armed heroes. Now, on the basis of what we know here in terms of how reflexively terrified these people become, these sanctified people in government-issued costumes, whenever they confront even a moment's hesitation on the part of somebody who's unarmed and helpless, they tend to be bold as Hector when they're in packs and they surround people like that. I believe that if they actually confronted people capable of putting up effective resistance, the first thing they would do would be to irrigate their skivvies. The second thing they would do would be to flee the area and then call in air support of some sort. That's what happens with the Imperial military right now, which is badly out of the habit of fighting anybody who can fight back. This reminds me of something I saw in the old Blackadder television series. I don't know if you're familiar with that, Mark. A wonderful piece of historical satire put out by the BBC during the 1980s. In World War I installment of the series, the main character Blackadder was talking about the imperial campaigns he had been involved in the late 19th century. He said our preferred enemy consisted of people who were about 4 feet tall and armed with nothing more fearsome than a blaze of dried grass. He said it was a wonderful gig. I'm paraphrasing here, of course. It was a wonderful engagement for a long time because we could mow these people down with the Kirchner guns and then enjoy ourselves, disporting ourselves with the local females. And, you know, war was a lark until suddenly 500,000 armed Germans hove into view in Belgium and France. And that's more or less the type of rude awakening I suspect that the imperial military, of which I consider the police now to be a part, is in for if they ever find themselves up against an army that can actually fight. As a matter of fact, that's what's going on in Afghanistan right now. The forces of the Empire headquartered in Washington, are getting their collective keister handed to them. They're controlling worthless territory, they're controlling the cities, and they're doing nothing but making large holes in the ground and alienating the population, just like the Soviet imperial forces did a number of decades ago in part of a war that was fomented by Washington, as Zbigniew Brzezinski has admitted. We've been involved in Afghanistan now for about 32 years. We've been at war in Iraq now for about 20 years. Nobody really pays attention to the fact that neither of those wars is being won by Washington, because they're not really in the business of winning wars. They're in the business of imperial power projection and, quite frankly, of creating a perpetual mechanism of enriching the military-industrial complex and the multifarious contractors and parasites that batten on it. And the same thing's happening here domestically. The war on drugs follows exactly the same dynamics.
With that point, that's an excellent plateau here. Well, a couple things. We got a caller. Real quick. A earlier caller wanted me to ask you, when will you begin the video broadcasting you mentioned you were going to start doing?
I've done a couple of video broadcasts for the network I was involved with before. Unfortunately, we're having file compression problems, and so okay. I had to put a notice on my Facebook page and also on my blog explaining that right now I'm trying to work out the technical details of getting the compression of my files into a suitable size in order to make them accessible by way of the website. I've done a couple, and they didn't turn out very well. And I'm really, as I like to say, a caveman who was just recently thought out by some of your scientists, and this technology is new and frightening to me. So I'm the caveman blogger.
The allegory of the cave, huh?
Exactly.
My gosh, what does all this light and land out here? I've been in this. Yeah, I know what you mean. I'm always two steps behind technology, too.
Yeah.
At any rate, I think we're at a good plateau. We'll take a call. The comparison of both the domestic and the far-flung imperialistic military, and that there's very similar motives and incentives at work. And that's very fascinating. And at this point, we'll take a call from Lark from Texas. How's it going, Lark? You out there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Fire away before we get to the messages. I don't want to cut you short.
All right. Well, I was a fan of your writings there for a while as I was discovering this thing called libertarianism.
Ah.
And I wanted to mention, just in addition to what you've already said very well, I wanted to mention the communitarian programs that were introduced in the 90s, like the POP program, EOP, ABCD, Compass, COPS, COPS, and of course, my favorite, JINSA Top Cop. That's where we get our top law enforcement personnel to go over to Israel and learn how to fight terrorism.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then they get to, then the terrorists get to come back here and infiltrate the other terrorists who are now terrorizing the American people.
Yeah, it's a win-win, at least for the people on the other side of the equation. We don't come out so well in it.
By the way, you were talking about what was happening up there in Idaho. I think we ought to look to former Washington Governor Gary Locke, who's the head of the Department of Commerce, and his EB-5 visa program to bring in Chinese communists to buy up big chunks of land up there in Idaho. I guess they must like it there.
Yeah, well, Governor Otter has been involved in that as well. There's a major initiative that grew out of a trip that he made to Beijing about 7 or 8 months ago, where they're going to be buying a large tract of land. These state-owned, nominally capitalist, but actually corporatist, state-owned enterprises from China are going to be creating an entire industrial park. I think it's northeast of Boise, if I remember correctly. But that's very much the wave of the future here in terms of whatever would be done in the industrial economy, which is moribund in Idaho, as it is pretty much elsewhere in this hollowed-out, once-free country. So that's very much of a piece of what you're describing there.
Will, would you agree that political correctness is really a primary tool that is actually wielded by the people who have infiltrated our country through academia and otherwise?
Oh, certainly.
Essentially taking it over, especially even Libertarian Party.
Well, it's political correctness. The first use of that expression comes from the Soviet Communist Party Central Committee way back in, I think it was 1918, when a directive was issued to liquidate the Cossacks of the Don River region. They said this is the only politically correct solution to dealing with these rich Cossacks is to exterminate them down to the last man. That's the first usage of the phrase politically correct that I've been able to find. And I think what happened is that concept was disseminated through the Frankfurt School, among others, which are, of course, the people who are involved in creating what we now call cultural Marxism.
You know, you wrote a wonderful article about communitarian law and communitarianism back in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you identify yourself as a libertarian, but I have noticed that you have not spoken a word about it since, at least in print. And it's not a criticism intended here. I just am curious why the libertarians do not engage communitarians from a philosophical and political standpoint just on the basis of property, privacy, and due process alone.
Yeah, I agree.
Why are we libertarians not even engaging the communitarians, including people like yourself since 2004 and people like Dr. Paul?
Let's have him answer here, Lark. Go ahead, Will.
Well, just a couple of years ago, I wrote an article that was syndicated by some religious news services talking about the communitarian threat and how the language has been engineered in the direction of communitarianism in ways that are awful subtle but are really quite important. And I'm involved in a book project right now, literally a 200 or 300-page book project that goes into detail about the origins of communitarianism and the myriad ways that it's being promoted, not merely politically and academically, but also through churches and through any so-called community organization. I've got to the point where I wouldn't even use the word community because I believe that's a term that is being used as a term of art to collectivize people's thinking. And that's one of those words that I wish people would listen to and, in an intellectual sense, take the safety off of their pistol every time they hear it, because chances are if somebody's using the word community, they're thinking in terms of what's mine is mine and what's yours is ours because you're part of the community. But I have been talking about it. It's not something that I've spent as much time on as I'd like to, and I certainly wish that libertarians or Christian individualists, which is how I describe myself now, it's a refinement of what I had used by way of a self-description a couple of years ago. Christian individuals really should be engaging the communitarian movement across the spectrum here, because that's, I think, the most important battlefront in this war to try to preserve life, liberty, and property is this war of ideas having to do with the fundamental question of the primacy of the individual in terms of politics.
Well, from what I can tell, we're losing the battle big time because too many of our top guns here in America, the intellectual elite, people who are educated about these matters, have simply shut down. And it makes me every day angry and fearful for my countrymen, and it makes me especially angry at those people who call ourselves leaders, even people at American Free Press who never mention this word.
Well, keep an eye out for the book. I'm going to let people know when it's available. It should be available hopefully in the next several weeks.
Well, in the meantime, your listeners with their mark can read Anti-Communitarian Manifesto, and we'll look forward to your book, Will. Thank you.
Thanks, Lark. Appreciate your call. Hey, Will, we got just a little bit of time before the messages. Here they come. Hark, I hear the cannon roar. We'll be right back with a little more from Will Gregg, maybe one more caller, and my parting thoughts. Stay tuned.
times like these, you can't depend on the government to keep you warm and fed, but you can depend on the Vermont Bun Baker to do just that. With the Vermont Bun Baker, you'll never be in a situation where you can't cook, bake, fry, boil water, or heat your home all at the same time. One of the most revolutionary cook stoves, wood stoves ever, the Vermont Bun Baker is available with or without soapstone veneer, a natural stone that retains heat and radiates it back into the room once the fire is out. A beautiful addition to your home, the Vermont Bun Baker has an efficiency rating well above 75% and qualifies for the wood stove tax credit. For more information, watch the Vermont Bun Baker on YouTube and live stream, or visit us at www.vermontwoodstove.com. You can also reach us by calling 1-866-SOAPSTONE. Don't ever be hungry or cold because the power's gone out. With a Vermont Bun Baker, all you have to worry about is what's for dinner.
Heart-related health problems affect millions of people each year. Maybe you're one of the many who suffer from issues related to angina pain, high blood pressure, congestive heart failure, unbalanced cholesterol, irregular heartbeat, or clogged arteries. There is a solution that doesn't involve expensive prescription drugs that only mask the problem and leave you with horrible side effects. If you are ready to live your life free of sickness, pain, and fear, live your life with increased vitality, energy, and youthfulness, and experience your body healing itself, then you're ready for Heart and Body Extract from Healthy Hearts Club. Heart and Body Extract has a 23-year proven track record of using certified organic herbs that make up an excellent formula to balance and support the heart and circulatory system. In as little as 2 weeks, you can feel amazing results when your 2-month supply of Heart and Body Extract today. Call 1-866-295-5305 or go to hbextract.com.
Our skyrocketing prescription costs draining your budget? If you don't have insurance or are taking medication not covered by insurance, the Powerhouse Savings Card can lower your prescription costs by up to 50%. Now you and your family can save 20 to 50% on all prescriptions. It's accepted by most pharmacies and mail-order pharmacies nationwide. No prescription card is easier to use. Just show your card and save 20 to 50% right on the spot. There are no monthly fees, just a one-time processing fee of only $4.95 for you and your immediate family. Stop paying full price for prescriptions. Stop going without the medication you need because it costs too much. Now your family can get the prescriptions they need at a cost you can afford. Call 1-800-963-0232 now and start saving money with the Powerhouse Savings Card. Call 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232.
093.
We're back for the last segment here, winding up this hour on January 27, 2011. I want to thank you all for listening with our interview with William Norman Gregg of Pro Libertate. That's freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Freedom in our time, one word, .blogspot.com. Pro Libertate. And Will has long been a very insightful writer. I knew him back when he wrote for the New American Magazine. He was there a number of years. He's moved on to pursue other journalistic avenues. He's got a family, lives out in Idaho. And Will, are there other topics? I know we've dealt very well, I believe, here with the militaristic mindset of both our imperial military and the similarities here and with our domestic police, and now they're sort of an adjunct of the military. What other issues do you have that you're tackling? Is this sort of your main beat now, the overall law enforcement abuse and bad policy and all that? Or do you have some other avenues that we might want to know about that are coming up on your blog?
I write quite a bit about what's going on with respect to the municipal and state dimensions of the ongoing economic collapse, which I consider to be an issue that's intimately tied up with the matter of law enforcement, because, as has been said, the police are to the state as the blade is to the knife. And what's happening, of course, is that these cash-strapped municipalities now are relying increasingly on the police as unambiguous revenue farmers, as a profit center. So I write a lot about those issues. I've written somewhat about so-called economic hitmen, both foreign and domestic. That's something you probably covered on your show quite a bit, Mark, the way that the emissaries of the banksters have been fanning out not only internationally but here domestically as well, getting communities, I hate to use that word, but I think it's appropriate here, addicted to debt and then basically taking over everything of value therein, just plundering, sacking, looting, pillaging, whether you're talking about countries abroad or cities and states here domestically. I write about that quite a bit. I write a little bit about healthcare-related issues and the socialization of medical care and healthcare in general, not only nationally, but on the state and local level. Here in Idaho, as a matter of fact, there's a really interesting contradiction between the discussion of nullifying Obamacare here in Idaho, which I think is a wonderful idea on the one hand, and on the other hand, pursuing federalization of other aspects of healthcare and education. Education is another subject I've written about quite a bit. But I try to cover all issues from the perspective of somebody who is obsessed with the question of individual freedom and human dignity. I think that politics, best understood, should be an exercise in applying the golden rule, and that the way that it's typically practiced is a never-ending search for self-serving exceptions to the golden rule. That's why we put coalitions together, as Barack Obama once said it, to force redistributive change. Or as Frederick Bastiat said, politics is an exercise of everybody trying to live at the expense of other people. You want to be the consumer rather than the consumed. That was Lenin's formula for politics. Who does what to whom? Who consumes whom? That was the chief political question for Lenin. My approach is exactly the opposite. I emphasize the golden rule, because the golden rule is the only alternative to the iron fist.
Thank you. Well, thanks for being on the show. That's freedominourtime.blogspot.com. William R. McGregor, Pro Libertate. I'm your host, Mark Anderson, American Free Press Editor. Stay cool, stay free, stay tuned. We'll see you next time here on this show.